May it please the Court.
I'm Donald Falk for American Honda Motor Company, Inc. Certifying the nationwide class in this case, the District Court presumed away the individualized issues that should have kept the case from being certified at all, much less.
Counsel, Judge Gould, if you could, I don't know if that's a podium that can raise up, but if you can talk into the microphone more clearly, we'd be able to hear you better.
Certainly, Your Honor. I seem to have a frog in my throat, but I'll do my best. Is that better?
I wonder if
that's fine now.
Can adjust the sound, please.
I thought they could raise those podiums, too. Maybe not. Maybe this advocate is very tall. I can't tell from
I didn't think I was that tall, Your Honor, but I'll do my best to stay as close to the mic as possible without getting feedback.
A little feedback there, if you can just a couple inches back.
How's this? Is this?
All right, speak up.
Never been told to do that before. But in any event, in certifying the class in this case, the court had to presume away the individualized issues. First, with plaintiffs from Maryland and Florida, the class was certified nonetheless for uniform nationwide application of California law. And to do that, the court had to disregard the potentially outcome determinative differences in 44 sets of state laws in order to reach a conclusion that common issues predominated under a causationless version of California law that would allow uninjured parties to be members of a Rule 23 class. But uninjured parties can't sue in federal court at all, and California cannot impose its consumer statutes, which are uniquely amenable to class certification under state law standards, nationwide.
Well, it sounds like there may be two main issues. One, should a class at all have been certified? And second, if a class is certified, what law should apply? And some of the seconds related to whether California is inappropriate. I want to go to the first question, the certification. They rely quite a bit on the Tobacco 2 case and imply that when there's extensive and long-standing advertising, that we can presume reliance for individual consumers. And I didn't know if you had a comment. I'm curious, first, how much advertising was there? And how much was this system a focus of it? And how long did it take place? And basically, is it similar to the tobacco advertising relative to nicotine?
It is far from that, Your Honor. The advertising that addressed the CMBS only took place in the first model year, 05-06, the 06 model year. There were two commercials. One ran for a week. That was the one Mr. Mazza saw. The other one ran for about 6 months, ending, I believe, in the summer of 06. And it had a total broadcast, a total of 2,200 airings, which sounds like a lot, except that's in 109 markets over 8 months. So you're talking once a week or so on average or less. And it also aired on some cable channels where the frequency, unless you watch the tennis channel, it's very hard to presume that anyone saw any of these commercials that addressed the CMBS. There was also a print ad. There's no evidence as to how many consumers saw or relied on that. And then there was information about the CMBS at the point of sale and on the website, some of which on the website, some of which disclosed the things that the plaintiffs say were concealed. But this is not a saturation campaign of the type that was at issue in Tobacco 2. It's not even close to that, Your Honor.
Do we have any idea how widely disseminated the correct information was?
No, we do not, Your Honor. They have two claims, basically. There's one, although they acknowledge that the system has stopped five accidents just between them alone, they have this idiosyncratic understanding of how it's supposed to work. And we know it's not usual because the plaintiffs here alone account for half of the complaints, the four complaints that Honda's received, that the system didn't work as people expected. And so one of the one that they had in their complaint is that the system doesn't always progress through three stages of alerts that culminate in seatbelt tightening and braking. And they say that all of the buyers of new and used Acuras with CMBS would not have bought the technology package, which also has cruise control and run flat tires, or would have paid less or something if they had known that it didn't always go through all iterations. It might skip to the chase and brake sooner. The other claim, and that is disclosed at point of sale and other places fairly widely.
Is that all based on some algorithm? So if someone immediately pulls out in front of you and you're traveling at 70 miles an hour, it would jump to the third stage? Or is it a defect in the vehicle where it's supposed to go through each three, or is it dependent upon the circumstance presented?
I believe it's dependent on the circumstance presented, Your Honor. It's a radar system that calculates the distance and the closing speed, and it only works when there's over 10 miles an hour and a 10-mile or more gap in speeds. And because it's radar, there are a variety of things that can make it operate in different ways. It has three possible stages, but it is it is intended to provide an alert and mitigate unavoidable collisions as best it can. There's no product defect claim here, Your Honor, and in fact, there's no evidence, and we're unaware of any complaints that the CMBS has been a problem and an accident. The other claim that they did not come up with until their second class certification motion, and were had not settled on this even at their interrogatory answers, was that the Honda should have disclosed that the system may shut off in wet weather, at which point a warning light goes on to alert the driver of that fact. And again, this is the sort of thing where...
Counsel, you seem to be mumbling a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I this leaning over is not helping me on that. Again, with the question of the alert that it shuts off sometimes shuts off in wet weather, again, that's something that has not prompted very many complaints, and in fact it's quite possible that some people would rather it did not automatically apply the brakes and left the car in the control of the driver when the conditions were wet. I mean, one driver's bug is another driver's feature in this situation as well. But Judge Gwynne, you asked a couple specific questions, but you first were sort of looking at class certification generally, under the California law aspects, or they're intertwined, of course. But
it is intertwined because under the B3, you're still going to have to make a showing that the preponderance of the issues are facilitated by a class action. But then there's a secondary issue as to whether, if a class action is appropriate, or can a class action for a nationwide class be certified when there seems to be some differences as between the state's treatment?
Well, we believe in these circumstances it can't be certified because there are significant differences, as several circuits have recognized, in the state's treatment of consumer protection laws. And
let's assume there are some differences here. All of the quarter of the plaintiffs come from California. The place of business is in California. It's unclear to me that from the briefing that what the differences are in terms of unjust enrichment. If this class were certified, couldn't the judge also certify a subclass that would pertain to other states that have different requirements here, but the majority of contact points of these plaintiffs appear to be in California?
Well, we're still waiting for that first California plaintiff to show up with a complaint, Your Honor. The class is defined so broadly as to encompass people who have no problem with this system. And three-quarters of the plaintiffs received the communications, the advertising, learned what they learned about CMBS in their home states, made their transactions in the home states, and the interest of those states in regulating consumer advertising and consumer transactions within their borders is quite strong, and the California Supreme Court has recognized that in McCann. It's not a one-way street here. The place of the wrong, as this court recognized in Avogados, is one of the main factors in deciding which governmental interest is paramount. And the place of the wrong of a nondisclosure is where it should have been, something should have been disclosed. The place of the wrong of advertising is where the advertising was communicated. Certainly California doesn't apply the law of an out-of-state corporation's headquarters just because some conduct was formulated there. If the plaintiffs were Californian and the events occurred in California, you can't start from the premise that we're going to have a nationwide class and let's see which law is the best if we're going to do that. You have to start from the premise that should there be a nationwide class at all under one state's law? The plaintiffs didn't offer any subclasses, and I think when you start looking at the variations in state law, there'd be a lot of subclasses.
Thank you. Counsel, could you address one issue for me that relates to choice of law? So suppose here there's a California federal court forum would apply California law on consumer protection, but the California law has choice of law principles that would, I guess, say what law would they apply? Would they apply California law or some other state's law to consumer protection claims? And so my question is, I thought that analysis required looking at the interests of all the people. And I understand that California as a state has an interest in applying its law to claims on wrongs committed in their state, or maybe claims on wrongs committed elsewhere if someone comes into their forum, like the named plaintiffs. But I'm not really seeing what is the interest of the state of California in applying its law to claims of non-California residents who are just members of a class?
Well, that's our argument, Your Honor. Precisely, there is no interest, or it's a secondary interest. It is not the strongest interest under the governmental interest test. When you're talking about consumers like the named plaintiffs here who are out of state and made their transactions out of state, learned what they learned, got their misimpressions about the CMBS out of state, and claim to have acted on them. And that's particularly important here because of the wide variations in not only in some of the substantive elements of the consumer protection statutes, but in the version adopted here, which basically would excuse plaintiffs from anything resembling the kind of common proof. It would just presume away common proof based on some state law class certification doctrines that just don't apply in federal court.
Well, the proof in this case would just deal with the braking system, would it not?
Well, the proof in this case has to deal with what consumers thought, what buyers thought about what the system did, and whether they relied, and whether they were injured by, in any way, by those not knowing the things plaintiffs said they should have known. And that is a highly individualized inquiry.
The common thread was advertised that the braking system could do various things. Later there was a different advertisement, and we're not sure how many consumers even saw that. But the common thread is dealing with the advertisement, proclaiming it would do something, and they're all claiming that the braking system didn't work.
But, Your Honor, there's not even evidence of common exposure by buyers to any particular advertisement, and they did change over time. And that devolves into a welter of individualized inquiries. There's no exposure that any buyer saw, much less relied on, any ad beyond these two plaintiffs. And it's initially the plaintiff's burden to show that there are common issues and that they may be dealt with by common proof. And they just haven't carried that burden here. I was trying to reserve a little time for rebuttal, Your Honor, but I seem to have...
I'll give you a couple minutes.
Thank you.
Judge Nelson, could we give the appellant a minute or two for a rebuttal argument after the appellee's done?
I indicated that he would have 2 minutes.
May it please the Court, Mark Primo for the plaintiffs. I wanted to respond to a few of the points that were made. First of all, in terms of the issue of whether the class was properly certified, and specifically with regards to the issue of the advertising that was done, although it's true that the product was advertised over time through various medium, as many products are, the common thread is that in none of this advertising were the omissions that are the heart of our case made. The omissions are throughout the advertising, the disclosures were never made. And that's the common thread throughout the case. So regardless of whether we're talking about a pamphlet that was distributed or a television commercial or internet advertising, all of which the trial court exhaustively reviewed in its decision, as the trial court pointed out, none of this advertising revealed the key facts about the system, which is that...
Let me ask you about that, because I candidly am not sure I understand how material the so-called omission is. So you've got apparently an omission that it doesn't cycle through all three. Why would that be of any importance to a consumer?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, that is important because the product was advertised as doing that. So clearly the company saw...
If you're driving down a highway and somebody pulls out immediately in front of you and it doesn't cycle through all three and instead just immediately goes to the braking, why do you care that it didn't have a minor tug on the brake first?
Right. And before that, the first level of warning. The answer is because it gives you more of an opportunity to avoid the accident. And I think that
would be true if all accidents or all driving were similar, but don't we know from our daily experience that no 2 days and no two trips are ever the same?
Well, let me put it this way, Your Honor. Honda's advertising department thought it was an important enough feature to emphasize in their advertising. So I'm not a marketing person. I would just rely on Honda's advertising strategy to maximize their profits and sales and look to their decision to emphasize this feature, number one. Number two, the other key disclosure that was not made is that this braking system could shut off in bad weather precisely when you would want warning of an impending collision. But most importantly, I want to underscore this point, regardless of my opinion of the materiality or anyone else's, the key is that's a common question, it's a factual question for the trier of fact. So Honda will have ample opportunity to make precisely the argument that you were alluding to at trial and say, well, this wasn't really a big deal, who cares? And the jury may agree with them, and the jury may say this wasn't material, no liability.
Under 23b-3, don't you still have to make out a showing that there's a predominance of common issues?
Absolutely, and that's what we do by identifying a potentially material issue, an issue that's not immaterial as a matter of law. We have a common issue because through a common question materiality, you can infer or presume reliance.
But you just go ahead and presume the materiality, and each of these consumers may have a different sense as to whether it's material to them.
Actually, Your Honor, the materiality is not being presumed. That's the question for the trier of fact. What's the material fact has been identified from which the material, from which presumption can be derived. So if the court held, for instance, on a motion to dismiss that as a matter of law this wasn't a material issue, then the case would be over. But since it's an open question as to whether or not this is a material omission, if it is,
Mr. Primo, Judge Gould with a question. I thought what Judge Gwynne's question was getting to was that the materiality inquiry would be different for different purchasers. That it might, something might be material to one, but you couldn't assume it's material to all members of the class, which goes toward whether there are common issues that predominate. Now, let me ask you another question on that point. What bothers me about the theory under which the district court certified this class is that, as I understand it, the district court assumed or analyzed it that California law of consumer protection, because it's most favorable to consumers, that no one should have a gripe anywhere in the country. Any consumer should be happy to have California law apply. But it seems that the states also have an interest in how stringently manufacturers or sellers of products are treated in their courts, so that Ohio or Washington, if they want, our state Supreme Courts can set a standard for consumer protection that's different than California. Right? If they want to indulge the manufacturers, they can set a different law. And so what I don't understand is how the court could apply California law to every purchaser of this brake system, whether they're in Ohio or Washington or Vermont or wherever.
Well, Your Honor, let me respond to that, but let me preface my comment by just responding to your first point about materiality. The reason why you don't need to look at what each individual buyer may or may not think is material is because it's determined through the eyes of a reasonable consumer, which of course provides one question predominant for the entire class. But turning to your specific question about the choice of law analysis, what the district court did is meticulously applied California's choice of law analysis under Washington Mutual and went through the three steps. And I think your question goes to the second step, which is, do other states have an interest in applying their consumer protection laws? The issue, and what the trial court found, though, is that the defendant did not meet its burden to demonstrate that any particular state had an interest in applying its consumer laws. So in this case, what you're saying is very possible, and in another case where a defendant made a persuasive argument to the trial court that particular states had an interest in applying their laws, then under California's choice of law test, that would proceed to the third question, which is, well, which state's interests are more impaired, the state that has an interest other than California, in this case, or California? And then you look at the factors that were identified in California cases, such as Closeweger and Worshiba, which is in our papers, and you look at multiple factors, one of which, and the most important of which, I would say, is where did these communications and representations emanate from? And as is clear in this case, not only is the defendant headquartered and incorporated in California, but all of their advertising and promotion was designed and decided and emanated from California. The decision...
I understand that that's where the communications, the headquarters were, and the ad agency, so you can make that argument. But notwithstanding, isn't it possible that a communication might be considered unlawful in California, but be considered lawful in Ohio?
It's certainly possible, but it's the defendant's burden to point that out, to persuade the trial court that a particular state, for instance, Ohio, has laws that, and I think you're going to step one now, which is the material differences, has a material difference. So let's say in Ohio there was this important difference in the standard for what is misrepresentation, actionable misrepresentation. That's fine. And then the defendant would have the burden to say, and Ohio has an interest in applying that law. And if that's the case, then the defendant would have the burden to say, and that interest trumps California's interest in regulating its own home state corporate citizens.
But the practicalities of your argument, I think, taken to its logical extreme, is it'll be in some ways a race to the bottom. And so corporations are typically oftentimes headquartered in Delaware. Delaware's noticeably had favored protections for their corporations. They're headquartered there. And you're going to get in, I think, into a situation where the state more favorable to, not to consumers, but to the corporations, is going to be the situs or the controlling law in a lot of these cases.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that corporations use a range of factors to decide where they're headquartered. Some of the factors that you mentioned, they may factor in, but it's a public policy decision. And for whatever reason, California has the laws that it has, as set forth by the California legislature.
Doesn't that beg the question? Other states have their own laws.
Precisely. And that's why California's governmental interest three-step analysis must be done for each state. And it's certainly possible that in some case, not this case, but in some case, the defendant could persuade the trial court that there are material differences for another state, that because of those differences, the other state, the non-foreign state, has an interest, and that those interests trump California's interest.
But counsel, doesn't
and Mr. Primo, my question. Go ahead, Judge Nelson. Go ahead, if you like.
Well, just very quickly, doesn't California also have the possibility, if proof has come in that Ohio is more favorable to consumers or has different interests, that the district court judge could create a subclass in that case? And there could be a subclass in one state or several states, plus the other class in California. Isn't that possible?
Well, absolutely. If going through the state-by-state analysis, if it's, as a result of the three-step analysis, if certain states, it's inappropriate to apply California law to the class members in that state, then those states would not be part of the nationwide class. California law would not be applied to them, and a subclass could be created for those states.
All right, thank you. Judge Gould, please proceed.
Well, I was still trying to understand, what is the interest of the state of California? It's the same question I asked your opponent. What is California's interest as a state in applying its law to a purchaser in, let's say, Alaska, who buys the brake system and is just a member of the class, as alleged, but is not bought in California and did not enter California like the named plaintiffs to bring suit? What's the interest of California of applying consumer protection law to all the consumers in the whole country?
The interest that California has is in regulating its corporate citizens, the corporations domiciled in its state. That's the interest that California has, and that needs to be weighed against the interest of, in your example, for instance, one consumer buying this product in Alaska. And that's the balancing, that's the third step of the governmental interest analysis. So you have, on the one hand, California's significant interest in regulating the corporations that are headquartered in California, and then you have to weigh that against Alaska's interest in applying its own laws to one consumer in its state. And it's, of course, not even close. California's interest in regulating its in-state corporations is significant.
But your other answer was that the burden would be upon Honda to prove that the interest in these other states should be considered, and that wasn't done in this case. Is that correct?
Your Honor, it is the defendant's burden pursuant to California choice of law procedure, or, I'm sorry, controlling California choice of law. However, this was done in this case. The defendants were not successful in persuading the trial court, but they certainly made a good go of it. They submitted a 100-page appendix, a state-by-state analysis of every state implicated in this litigation, the 44 states. So the briefing was significant. The arguments were made, and the trial court's decision reflects that, where it acknowledges the arguments that were made by defendant, but didn't find them persuasive under the three-step governmental interest analysis.
Are there other questions?
I have 19 seconds left, so I feel like I shouldn't waste it, but I think that's my case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Thank you, Judge Nelson. Every minute helps. Problem here is that the court reversed the burdens as to who had to show common exposure, common materiality, common reliance. It was their burden to show who saw what and that everybody saw the same thing, and they didn't show that. There are a number of different types of disclosures at different places, less than a year of mass media campaign, and then it kind of depended on who saw what when they went into the dealer. And there was no evidence whatsoever that this was the same or common, and some things had disclosures and some things didn't. But the burdens were reversed, and what the buyers did see is important. Of course, there's no evidence about what the used buyers saw at all, but what the new buyers saw is important because that sets the context, which is how you determine the materiality of the claimed omissions here. Emphasize again that there is no defect claim. They didn't want to bring that claim. They didn't make it. They didn't support it. And I would also say that the regulatory balance, the interests of other states in promoting business and in giving consumers the right level of relief and right level of access to the courts and the right level of compensation is an important interest the California Supreme Court has recognized, and that interest is more impaired here. California can regulate its home corporations through California consumers and, of course, through public prosecution, but it cannot export these broad presumptions that do not accord with federal law. After Shady Grove, they just can't export those presumptions, much less the substantive law underlying them. I'm sure I'm out of my 2 minutes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, on both sides. It was well argued. The case is submitted. We proceed to the last case on the calendar today, which is the case of State of California Department of Toxic Substances Control versus Brookside Residential Corporation.
Thank you very much for your